This is podcast number one of the Sweaty Thoughts podcast with comedians Mikey Perry and Benji Garcia Reyes.
Benjamin.
I know. When people say Benjamin, I'm like, anyways, hi, everybody. Sure. This is episode number one. It's the beginning of a new beginning, and you guys have all decided to join us on a quest of knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
Documenting experiences, recollecting other ones, passing on over wisdom and stuff.
Yeah, so pretty much we're going to go over different types of comedy issues, different types of comedy situations, and we'll go over them as much as we can. If we get feedback as far as what people want us to go over, we'll do that too. I think, first of all, Benji, we'll introduce ourselves a little bit more. So let's start. I think you should start. Just tell them
how well, we started. Well, that guy over there, his name is Mikey Perry. My name is Benji Garcia Reyes, and I go by the People's Comedian. I'm from San Diego, California, born in Tijuana. I am bilingual. I was raised here in the United States of America in the city of San Diego. I used to be a big San Diego football fan. That doesn't exist. I've been doing comedy tell as many jokes that, you know, teach people something good, especially if I suffered for it.
You started in San Diego?
Yes, I did. In the city of the America's finest city.
Do you remember your first open mic you ever went to?
I did. I was at the Mueller College, and I don't know what. Yeah, I think they just do like holistic medicine and stuff, but for whatever reason, they allowed in the same area where they have a classroom, they allowed people to do an open mic, and that's where I went to go tell some very terrible, non-funny jokes.
Where is Mueller College?
It's right there in North Park.
Oh, yeah.
Like Hillcrest, North Park area. Like if you go up Park Avenue and you just go all the way up, instead of hitting El Cajon, you just turn left and you go up. Yeah, right there. Right by Twigs. Right by the Stotts.
Do you remember any other comedians that are that you still see today from that open mic?
Oh, no, not at all. No, there was people that I think they might still be doing comedy, but I just haven't really hit the cycle, I guess, as much or seen as much. So.
All right. So,
what about you, Mr. Mikey Perry?
I'll tell you guys my story. I've only been doing it for a little bit under 2 years, I did a class out here in San Diego. I'm originally from Virginia. I've been out here for about 9 years now, actually.
Damn.
Since 2010. So yeah, time flies. And I was in the military. That's what brought me out here. And then I just got out, and then I wanted to find something to do. I needed to find something that I had a passion for, and it was right under my nose the whole time. And I just started doing comedy after people would tell me I should try it, which I think is a common story for a lot of comedians. Hey, you should try it.
Yep.
Like, a lot of us don't even think to do it.
Some people lie about it, though. Some people say their friends told them, and then you're like, You don't have any friends. None of them show up. Like, I think you're lying.
Like, what friends, dude? None of them support you.
You lie. You know, you can tell when the beginning bringers, and, you know, like, yeah, all right, he's got a bunch of friends, you know, all right, so maybe he's funny.
Yeah.
And sometimes they are. But, yeah, I wanted to point that out, that there's some people that say their friends told them, but never friends show up.
I wish. You know what? I wish that was a lie for me, because, like, I feel like there's a lot of other better stories than that, and I feel like I wish I could take credit for saying, oh yeah, I'm gonna do this shit, but it took a lot of peer pressure to get me to do it, like, for real.
I think for me it was peer pressure too. Gene DeBruder, who doesn't live in San Diego anymore, but he is a comedian, he moved to Oregon. He was a dude that kept going like, oh, you should go, you should hit the mic, and a lot of people know that, but yep.
Yeah,
and I finally did, and I got addicted.
Most people will push you and push you to do it, but they would never, ever try it themselves.
Yeah, I try to push people to do it. I like to, because then that way maybe they know how hard it is too. You know?
Like, yeah. I feel like everybody should try it at least once. Like, yes. Hey, look, and it's at the end of the day, it's like, I always say, like, watch me, dude. I'll even bomb on purpose for you to show you that everything will be okay. Like, what do you mean? Like, I mean, I do remember, like, I can understand just because I remember that beginning. I remember the first few months in the beginning where it was just, like, torturous. And it was, like, you know, and then
you're trying to figure it out.
Yeah, just figuring it out. And then it wasn't, I mean, it didn't take that long for me to get laughs, but it took a while to get consistent laughs or to be able to go through a whole set. Like, just getting laughs.
Feeling your way through, you know, being confident about it.
But, of course, just that one laugh. Even if you're going 5 minutes, you get one laugh. Like, breath that right there is enough. That's enough to be like, damn, killed that shit.
I'm murdered.
Murderville.
Like, Louis C.K. would be proud. This is at the time. That was before he... Anyways.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, who was your influences?
So, wait, hold on. Let me ask you some questions about Virginia.
All right. All
Did
right.
you do comedy in Virginia before you came over?
No, not at all. Well, no, because I came over because, like I said, I got stationed over here in the military, so I wasn't even thinking comedy.
And throughout that time, were you thinking about it? Did it ever come across while you're stationed here, like, oh, I might try comedy?
No, I'm not at all. Not at all. Not at all. Because it was a different group of friends at a different job after the military. And it was like, I mean, now when I think about it, I think about all of my long days in at work, like in the Marines. And it was like, damn, I did used to always just joke around. But you never really think of it that way. Because you don't think of it as a career. You just think of it as your personality.
Right. You're just trying to get, not to get bored. You're trying to make work less lame, you know?
You're just all, it's like, when you grow up, you know, when I grew up, like, all my friends would just, we would smoke weed in the car and just make fun of each other. Like, you know?
That's funny.
And you never think it would be anything, you know.
So it's that, it's growing up in Virginia, it wasn't, I mean, what was that kind of like? Was there like, because, you know, over here, there's a lot of cities, there's a lot of apartment complexes and stuff. Like, and I am from here. I've never been to Virginia. Yeah. So, like, what is it like? What was that like?
It's... Honestly, it is really similar.
And you being a minority is what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's different for sure.
Having to point out, if you guys just stumbled onto this podcast randomly and you do not understand that Mikey Perry is merely his name, but not what he looks like.
Yeah. I'm Filipino.
But I do look like a Benji Garcia Reyes, if you guys were just guessing.
I'm not
a white Mexican
disclose
at all.
his race.
We don't have to clear up any... Or, you know, clear up any misconstrusions. You guys are probably nailing the racist, you know, hammer with my name. Anyways.
And he's open-minded. He's open-minded Mexican because we just had tacos from Burger King right
Absolutely.
Now for the first time.
I might just let them into the family.
It was pretty bomb.
They were good. I mean, they might have beef in it.
Yeah, that's not.
That's why. Yeah. And the salsa was, it was all right.
Yeah.
I liked it. It was not bad, and it was at the same time. Sort of good.
Yeah. For Burger King. We're not trying to disrespect.
It wasn't Mexican food. It's a great interpretation.
Burger King.
It's like what's that kid playing The Good Doctor. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's good pretend.
Yeah,
you
it's
know?
Good
and,
pretend.
It makes you feel like it really is.
Yeah.
But deep down, we know it's not. it's not a real taco. And he's not a real special needs taco. So growing up, minority in Virginia, did that help shape some of your material, or how, so you know, like, do you like have PTSDs or?
I mean, actually, it did. I mean, I believe, especially growing up in Virginia, there was not a lot of Filipinos as they are here. I mean, there's Filipinos everywhere, but it wasn't like a huge community like it was here. So I wasn't really secluded to just hanging out with Filipinos. I hung out with all different races, and I was always able.
So they have different. There's other people.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's mostly white and black.
Okay,
but I
that
mean,
was my
that
was
like
I was
there's no
to get you with
there's
that
no
asking.
Mexicans out there. I mean, they're there, but
maybe
it's
that's
like
what I was really trying to ask.
Yeah, they're
Mexicans
there.
Out there?
But there's never a place where it's like, oh, you speak Spanish? Like nobody ever asked that out there. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's crazy.
Oh, I would probably ask you. I'd be like, yeah, he looks like a high
There's
Mexican.
No need for anybody to speak Spanish in Virginia.
He looks like a high Mexican here. No, like, no, oh yeah, like no hotels or No Chinese food places where you need Mexican cooking?
Yeah, no, hell no. That's another thing. Yeah, all the sushi spots out here and the Mongolian restaurants in the mall, like those are so all Mexicans.
Mexican food in Virginia. Have you had Mexican food in Virginia?
There's no taco shops at all.
Oh, okay. Because I was gonna tell you if you had one there versus over here. So then, when you came, where were you when you had your first real Mexican food from a Mexican?
I mean,
or at least a California taco.
Yeah, like the first time I do remember, I had a friend that lived out here near Grossmont. He was going to Grossmont. Ooh, that's a good college.
A lot of Mexican
I can't remember the name of the place, but I can bring you there because I know it's on Fletcher. Mm-hmm. And it's like next to his hot dog place.
Oh, hot dog places, not many places.
Yeah.
And it's not Winter Schnitzel.
And he was just like, dude, you're going to try this fucking carne asada fries. And I didn't even understand what, like, carne asada. That was the first time I ever heard those syllables put together. So I was like, carne asada fries, okay. And then.
Oh, yeah, those were another creation. Another great California Mexican creation. Yeah, I mean,
carne asada fries, a burrito. But yeah, Virginia's cool. But we're here now.
There you go. So, all right. Next.
So I was going to ask you what was your influences in the beginning, and did they change to who they are now?
There's a lot.
In the very beginning, who was your, like?
Well, I always, you know, like I watched stand-up, you know, younger when I was younger, so I would watch, you know, and then I could rent movies, so I would watch Chris Rock, and, you know, I got to watch Chappelle, and you know, I even got to watch Eddie Murphy and some Richard Pryor, you know, so. And then, Bill, you know, always Bill Hicks, you know, was in the 90s, he was a hot name. So, you know, I would watch late night TV a lot in middle school. So, you know, he was definitely a name that was, and he was funny, you know, and then George Carlin always, you know, so, you know, you just kind of just fall into that. And I mean, pretty much a lot of the bigger names. And then I had some, you know, some comedic influences growing up because I used to watch, you know, Spanish television. So. You know, there's a lot of slapstick from some characters, you know, Capulina, Cantinflas, and you know, other, you know, type of characters. Some even comedians, you know, Polo Polo, and then Donald Ramones. Al Ramones used to have a talk show.
Yeah.
You know, like an American-style format. So, and he would do, a open monologue every show, different stand-up, you know, and Spanish, and, you know, people dug it. So, that's it. You know, very recently just, like, Dan Hope and I used to like Greg Giraldo a lot and Patrice O'Neill. So, and then before the Louis C.K. thing, you know, it's not like I don't care, but I don't, it's not, you know, I don't know.
It's tough. Like, it's tough for Louis
C.K. It's
nothing
personal, like he discussed in me. It's just, you know, it changes things when, you know, it just, I don't know. It just kind of does. It's not like I'm trying to be feminist by no means, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I have my own problems or whatnot. But for whatever reason, it just doesn't, you know, I don't know. Just the platform's not the same, I suppose. I wouldn't blame people. But that's it. You know, that's it. I mean, nobody really right now, you know that. But those were pretty much the people that I would be looking at or that I'll listen to, you know.
What's your earliest, you were into watching stand-up and all that way before you actually started doing stand-up, right?
Yeah.
What's your earliest, like, memory or influence of, like, watching stand-up? Do you have, or can you even think of it?
It was definitely in middle school. I was, you know, I was probably, like, 11 or 10 years old.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. Like, it's weird because...
we didn't have HBO or cable. I grew up poor, and we only had it over the air, so we only had a couple of channels, you know, so... And at the time, there wasn't a lot of stand-up. The only time you would get to watch stand-up would be either late night, you know, TV, which we were already asleep. And then we wouldn't speak English at the time anyway. And then there was, like, the HBOs and stuff and the cables, you know. So you can, and VHS, you know, you could probably rent those.
Yeah.
If I recall. But because I used to, you know, at some point I was renting VHSs and I was renting some of those, you know, like the ones I could grab a hold of.
There were
some really bad ones out there. I don't even remember, but I got to see a couple of different ones, if I can recall. I keep trying to remember the name, but it was that when I first realized, like, stand-up was stand-up, you know, like, that's what I can recall.
I think with me, a few that I can remember early on, and it was weird because, like I said, I grew up in, like, we said that, but I grew up in Virginia, and it's a very, like, urban area that I was in, so, like, we would always watch, what I knew as far as stand up was Comic View. Comic on BET. View.
Okay.
Right. And that was like one of my earliest memories is staying up. I remember it came on at 10 o'clock and it was an hour long. I remember it was black comedy. And it was like, I still remember the stage. It was like girls sitting in the background.
Bruce was
to me one of my influences, oddly.
That's funny.
And then when Bruce stopped doing Comic View, the host was Arnaz J. I don't know if you know who Arnaz J is. But the only reason I know who they are is because of Comic View. And then a lot of other black comedians, Michael Blackson, even. Okay. I think Kevin Hart was on there before. When they were all coming up.
Hitting stride right before.
And it's funny, I think about it now, and like I start breaking it down. Like, damn, Comic View would actually not be that easy of a stage because there's distractions behind you with the girls behind you. There's a co-host that's in his little, like, he had his little like fixture on the side of the I forgot his name. He was like an older light-skinned guy. But it was like, and then I thought, I was like, damn, how many minutes? Like, I can't even remember how many minutes. I think it was like maybe like 8 or something like that.
Nice tight 8. So, I mean, there are clips online.
Yeah.
You know, just like all the other, you know, the Que Locos, like the Hispanic or Latino versions of it. But yeah, in the late 90s, you know, there was a bunch of more comedy was kind of, you know, being done. There was more cable, more TV channels even. You know, there was syndication, but definitely Comedy Central was churning out a bunch.
Yeah.
Because I remember seeing a bunch of those 20-minute ones, you know, when I was barely starting to...
It would just be like an episode.
Yeah, I mean, if you just were to YouTube and you put in stand-up comedy and you click on one, you know, you could keep watching it, you know, like anything else. You know, and that's kind of how it was. I would be watching... I would look for, like, full sets or longer, you know, the more stand-up of one person... I was trying to watch, you know, and especially if they were funny, I would watch all of it. But that's how I kind of figured out, you know, people that are there, like, oh, tripping me out. Like, did I not get it? Or are they not funny?
Yeah.
You don't know until later on. It's like, oh, they just kind of got there for whatever reason. Yeah. But it wasn't the same reason anyways, but yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure. What's next? So basically, another thing that we do, obviously besides podcasts, we do stand up. And one thing that we also do is produce our own shows.
Produce and promote the shows.
Yeah, produce and promote. So, I mean, with stand-up, I know for me, it was really... You don't realize how much work and how much time you're going to be when you get into stand-up. Like... Most people think, just like how I did when I first started, you just go up there and you just be funny. And that's, honestly, I think that's the reason why it looks so much harder to the outside world than what it really is. Because in your mind, you're just like, how am I going to go up there and be funny? I'm just going to freeze. Like, what am I going to talk about? This and that. But it's like, it's all staged. Like, it's all written. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are those guys that can do it. And don't get me wrong, most of us do it at certain points. But to actually just go up there with nothing in mind, like, that's like pretty much unheard of.
And making it seem like that's all it is. But, you know, like, you don't, you know, it just, you're good if people can't tell, you know, that's what it's supposed to be. You know, when you're yourself and pretty much a lot of stuff that you're saying and the best version of yourself is what they don't get. You know, they don't get it. And if you just sound natural, you know. Some people take time to sound natural. Some people sound fake. Some people try and sound natural, and their material is not natural, and all sorts of stuff. So yeah, it takes work to be likable and relative and natural.
Yeah, I mean, I tell people
experience.
Like, what I say is, I say, hey, look, it's just like a band. Like, if there's a band that's going on tour for like this month, and they have like 15 shows in the month. They're not going to have 15 different sets. They're not going to have like 15 different sets of 5 songs for each day. They're going to do the same 5 songs.
Yeah. They're not going to improv any song. I mean, if you're talking about jazz and jamming and whatever,
that's one thing.
That's different. And there are jam bands, but they're all structured around the songs that they play a lot, you know?
Yeah.
It's just they're just going long versions of them, you know, with a bunch of solos and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
But Yeah, it is. It's exactly that's what it is. It's just we don't have the instruments like that to justify needing to be that sharp or prepared or structured, you know, or synchronized or a bunch of things that align with music, you know, in the performance, you know, of comedy and preparation of comedy.
Yeah, like the one of the reasons why I fell in love with comedy is because I've always been a type to like go towards the harder like types of things to get into. And with comedy, I mean, not only did it fit my personality, but it was just like how why I joined the Marines instead of any other branch. It was just like, well, I just didn't want anybody to be able to talk any other branch to be able to talk shit to me. I literally joined the Marines off of pride. Like, fuck That's it. Funny. I don't want to be a Marine, but I just don't want anybody else to be able to talk shit. Which is a stupid thing, but that was my mentality.
You're ready to get married, son.
And then with comedy is the same thing. Like they say comedy is the hardest performing art form, or stand-up comedy is the hardest performing art form, because you don't have, it's instant. Either they hate you or they love you after everything you say, and there's nothing for you to hide behind. There's nothing else for them to look at. There's nothing else for them to listen to. There's nothing. It's just you, silence. You're the reason why there's going to be noise made in that room. Either it's going to be you talking, that's the noise, or it's going to be them responding to you in whichever noise you're creating them to make. So, I think that's just like a really tough.
Keeping them, not just getting their attention, but keeping their attention and then getting the payoff from that attention.
Yeah, it's the biggest payoff in any other art form that's on stage, like, because it's not only is it the hardest and the scariest to try to get out of the audience, but it's like, since it is that, it's also the most rewarding once you do get it.
And when you get it a lot, or like good comics get it really often, you know?
Yeah. Oh,
really
yeah.
Good, deep, consistent. And then, you know, awesome laughs that have wisdom behind them. I mean, the best jokes are the ones that blow your mind.
Yeah.
Because it's a truth that other people can see and knew, but that comic put it the right way to make a point and make it funny. So, yeah, absolutely why it's I mean, at least that's why it attracts me the same way it attracts Mikey, you know, and people that appreciate it, especially people that have tried it and can't do it, know how hard it is.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. There's definitely times where, you know, your mind gets blown by a joke. And it's like, sometimes my mind will get so blown that I won't even laugh. I'll just, in my head, I'm like, damn.
Yeah.
Like, I wish I thought of that shit.
Yeah, wish I thought of that, I love those. When it's like, yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Maybe we should do one of those.
I wish I thought of that.
We should do one of those.
Jokes together.
Yeah, well, there's a bunch I can think of.
That's what makes you love a comedian. When it's like, damn.
When he does a bunch of those. Yeah.
How did he think of that? Yeah, back to back to back.
Well, okay, so, all right. How much time we got? We got like 5 minutes. All right, let's do this one. One of the jokes that I recently read that a comic did that I thought, man, I wish I would have thought of that. Because I thought it was funny was the one that I'm pretty sure I read it off Freak Gene's wall. And he said that Donald Trump was trying to get the aliens to pay for the Space Force too. That is funny. That's very stupid.
And that's funny because once you say that, it's like, damn, what else can you think of that Donald Trump is trying to get somebody to pay, you know?
Like, that's the dumbest thing on top of another dumb thing. So, yeah, that's when I'm like, man, see that? That would still be great. It's a good joke, especially if you're Mexican and you're trying to get him to have your people pay for shit. But anyway, so yeah, do you have any of those, Mikey? What's one that you can think of?
I think what's funny is we talked about this not too long ago, but Anthony Jeselnik has a lot.
Okay.
And I don't like, he has a lot of offensive ones, but it's like still like he goes
just a few.
He goes the one that I can think of off the top of my head. He goes what does he say? He goes, oh, babe, I got to tell you something. Your mom tried to have sex with me last night. And then she goes, what, you're crazy, my mom's been dead for like, you know, however many years. And he goes, oh, well, in that case, you should always wear makeup. Right? That, no, that's the, like, you know, and that's the joke, because he's basically, and then, but the crowd, how the crowd reacts to that joke is like, they want to kill, like, oh, like, how can you?
So
it's like, and that's just the one that I can remember at the top of my head. But he has like, and that's how, and literally Anthony Jeselnik's, all his jokes are like that. It's literally,
yeah. He's like, he's definitely a shock comic.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's funny because it's not just being a shock comic, but yeah, shock humor is, you know, like Tosh, like Daniel Tosh, you know, same thing.
Yeah. And especially when it's kind of like made up like that, I feel like it's way harder to do.
Yeah. I mean, you can't get offended. There's this one that Tosh talks about raping dead babies, you know?
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
You know which one I'm talking about. And it's like, it's so silly. He's like, how can you get mad? You know, it's the imaginary baby, you know? And it's like, you know, like, and people get upset at that. And like, this baby doesn't exist or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the gist of it. You know, if you heard of it, you know what I'm talking about. But that's the point we're talking about. Like, some stuff is like, you can't get upset if it's a joke and you're joking about it and you're not trying to offend anybody. If you're trying to light the humor, you know, I mean, it just, that's why the good jokes that touch on those subjects aren't about the, you know, the subject, but they just touch on them enough and using reference to it, you know? So anyways, I don't know if that made sense to anybody but me.
Yeah. I mean, it's, if you're a comedian, you know, it makes sense. Or like, I mean, obviously for, as comedians, we're free speechers. So it's like,
yeah,
we don't understand. I mean, we understand. We get it. We get why it's offensive and all that. But at the same time, it's like, dude.
And even if we don't, we're still going to talk about it.
Yeah, it's like, it's like literally the world is on our shoulders as far as keeping those types of conversations alive.
Being able to say stuff like that. Oh, yeah, man. I love that. I love that even before I was doing stand-up. I think that's why I like stand-up, because the not having a filter and saying things that need to be said sometimes, or just saying what some people are thinking or what they're seeing too. And sometimes, you know, you being the one that says it, and the people that have experienced that and that aren't stand-ups, the times that they've said something and somebody around them, I'm like, yeah, right. Or like, oh, you know, he said what I'm thinking, you know? That's exactly what stand-up is.
You're supposed to feel a little naughty when you hear a joke, you know?
Yeah, because
you're supposed to be like, oh.
You wish you would have thought it, or you get it, or you know what it means.
Or you wish you can get away with saying that shit.
Oh,
that's
the
point of us.
I think that's the thrill of us. Yeah. But we get to say it. And, you know, like, some of us don't need a stage. Sometimes we just say it anyway.
Yeah. I get away with so much shit in my day job, the shit that I say, just because they know I'm a comedian.
Oh man, I should really push that. I've been trying to push it in my quarter pointed classes, you know, but anyway.
Yeah. No, I mean,
awesome.
One last thing is there's a documentary on Amazon called Can We Take a Joke? And it's basically all about that, where it's like we can't lose the offensive things, because at the end of the day, anything offensive is nothing but an opinion.
Yeah.
Like, and anybody that's so offended by one thing, I'm sure.